We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Your next president, Jason Hamill.
Hell yes.
Fastball, slider, curve, and occasional change for Jason.
Swing and a miss, strike three. Swing and a miss, good comeback by Hamill.
I give a voice to the people. I believe in you and you'll believe in me.
Swing and a miss, so Hamill makes that big pitch.
The 0-2 strike three call. Bullseye, a knee-high fastball that hit the outside corner. Swing and a miss, strike three. Hamill very sharp.
Jason Hamill and I approve this message.
Hit and run Sunday mornings 9 a.m. to noon on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago's sports station.
Some Silver Sun pickups to accompany some highlights. And then snippet of Jason Hamill running for president of something. I'm unhip to what that is, but maybe we'll get a chance to ask him. Oh, we will. He's on the line right now. We go to Jason Hamill on the Apomani Ford hotline. Apomani Ford is in Melrose Park, and Jason Hamill is on Hit and Run. Good morning, Jason. Thanks for coming on. How you doing?
Morning, Matt. I'm doing well, thanks. That's a breath of fresh air, I guess, right there. Listen to those the highlights and the my pitch for running for president. Remind me of the good old days.
Was it actually for president of the United States? Was that the idea? What was that thing?
I to tell you the honest truth, I have no idea. It was the president of something.
the president
of something.
All right, Sean Anderson, our producer, hop on, Sean. Tell Jason what you just pulled and where it was from.
So it's a YouTube video on YouTube, obviously, and it has like 100 views.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's for a t-shirt company.
Yeah, it was for a t-shirt company, and they were trying to. It was in the middle of the same year in our last election, and I was kind of having some fun with it. It wasn't the last election, but it was just coming up, talking about the election coming up, and they were like, "Oh, here's our idea. Let's have you run for president." And so my idea comes from the Happy Gilmore. Actually, it wasn't Happy Gilmore; it was a wedding singer from the drunk guy in the bar, and he's like, "Hell yes, that guy." And that was, for whatever reason, I'd seen that, and it was stuck in my head, and that became my punchline.
Oh, well, how perfect is it that you just brought up the wedding singer? Because one of the songs made famous in the wedding singer, it had already been famous, but it brought back, was Love Stinks by the Jay Giles Band. And yep, I don't know. Yep. Do you remember our interactions at Hot Stove Cool Music? It was 2015, and you taking part in that thing. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. All right. So here's the deal. Here's the deal. From my perspective, I want the listeners to hear it too. So me and Len Casper and the Chicago All-Stars getting ready to play that song. And Len says, all right, your job is to find somebody to do the spoken word part. Love stinks, right?
Love stinks.
To do that part.
Yeah.
That, yeah.
Yep.
And so your job is to find somebody. And so the first person I see is Jose Cardenal in the in the green room. And I have video somewhere of me teaching Jose Cardenal how to do the spoken word part in Love Stinks.
Yep.
And it's like,
yep.
Oh, my God, so much fun. And then I'm thinking, all right, well, is Madden going to be there? Is Theo? I asked Theo early on. He said, no, man, no, I can't do it. I can't do it. And then Theo shows up later again. I'm like, you got to help me, man. You got to help me. He's like, all right, let me go get some players. Hang on. Let me go get some players. And then he goes upstairs to all you guys were. And do you remember Theo asking you? Is that how it happened?
Basically, yeah. I mean, he wasn't just walking around pitching everybody. I think it was kind of he's always a guy that, you know, assesses the room first. And you know, I must have had nothing to do that day. He said, "Hey, you want to help out with this?" And it's pretty basic. And I was like, "I guess, sure, whatever."
Yeah,
I'm a music guy. I don't mind it. And you know, I'm a big Happy Gilmore fan too. So
there you go. Yeah. So Jason Hamill. Jason Hamill, Jason Mott, and Travis Wood, the three of you guys hanging out. And we talked about it, and we went upstairs, and then it ended up being the three of you and Jose Cardinal together all around one microphone. There's pictures. Somewhere there's video. We looked for it, Jason. We were trying to find the audio of you guys doing it, but we could not find it. I guess you're lucky?
Yeah. Incriminating footage. kind of like my days as a mascot in college, which is good. Still haven't been able to find that. It's just good.
Now we're getting somewhere. Was that at Treasure Valley Community College, or was it?
It was. Yeah.
So what was the mascot? What were you, Jason?
We were. So our team was the Chuckers, and basically a game bird similar to like a pheasant or something like that, and. Uh-huh. I was a college kid, was broke, had no money, and it was paying $10 a game. And it was honestly something that the baseball team just kind of put on ourselves. We stumbled upon it in the clubhouse, and it was just in this black trash bag sitting on top of the lockers. And we were just hanging out one day after practice, and we were like, what is up there? And somebody climbed up there, brought it down. And sure enough, there was giant like bird head that kind of looks like the Baltimore Oriole head. And then, you know, all we did was just put the bird head on, and then there were some wings that went with it, zip up, and then we just wore our baseball pants with our socks. We were high socks guys. And then you'd run upstairs and get to the gym, and it was like the only team we did was the basketball team. It was girls and men's basketball, and that was just what we did. So, and, you know, I'd switch off with our second baseman, who was a foot and a half shorter than me, so you always knew who was running the gig. And it was just fun, you know, guys, a way to let out on Friday nights, and you know, it turned into something and made a couple bucks for some Arby's or some Burger King here down the road.
Wow, that is tremendous. And now I will frantically look for video for that. So I can put those things, put those videos together.
Good luck. I've been looking for it too.
So this is after you were drafted. You were drafted out of high school in the 23rd round by the Mariners, but instead you went to college. And played some summer league ball, and then drafted 2 years later in the 10th round by the Rays. So why not go right to the bigs? Did you want the college experience, Jason?
I did want the college experience. Obviously my parents pushed, you know, education first, and I agreed with it. And honestly, I wasn't this like shooting star. I wasn't this big time prospect. I got kind of lucky at the time that I got spotted in high school. I was facing a top prospect who ended up signing with Arizona State on a football team. And I handled him pretty easily that day, and there were some scouts there to watch him. And that's when kind of the baseball thing took off. And it was towards the end of my high school, my senior year, when that happened. So I didn't really have any buildup to school. I had applied to go to a couple certain schools, and I was going to try and walk on there. And then I was accepted already into a local community college that I was, you know, had a good chance of getting some type of aid, whether it was a baseball scholarship or something like that. And, you know, things just happened, and I ended up getting a scholarship after I got spotted that day to Treasure Valley. I went for a quick visit, and things were great. And I came back, and I mean, I signed there on the spot, and I was ready to go for a scholarship. And, you know, so I took care of the school thing, and I was going to get a little bit further in baseball. And then, you know, I was also 6'7", 180, you know, like it's a wet noodle, and, you know, run around in the shower to get wet. And so I ended up putting on a little weight in school, and my velocity jumped up 5 or 6 miles an hour. And, you know, the rest of the story is told.
Wow. Interesting. And then drafted by the Rays in 2002, as I mentioned, in the 10th round. I've been talking so much about the MLB draft, man, these past few weeks, and how, and here comes the draft in 10 days, and how they're limiting it to 5 rounds. And it's 1,000 players who will not get picked. And, mm-hmm. and both of the times that you were drafted, you might not have ended up getting picked. There's going to be guys who don't get picked and can't go back to college who are just going to say, well, I guess that's it. And there's going to be some careers that never happen because of this.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah. Yeah. Thursday was a dark day for sure. The draft coming up is one thing changing that, but, you know, cutting minor leaguers, you know, guys that are trying to live a dream. And there were so many minor league teams too. So there's a lot of players underneath just one big league roster that are all trying to fulfill their, you know, potential. And, you know, I don't know. It's tough to think that only five rounds. I know you could still sign an unlimited amount of free agents. But then there's a cap on what they can sign for. You know, I do feel like some people will start to, like you said, they'll probably struggle with their own value in their head and might give up on that dream. And, you know, baseball's a game we grew up playing in the cul-de-sac as a kid. You know, it's tough right now to see kind of what's going on with baseball.
It really is. And you add that with the upcoming elimination of 40 minor league teams mm-hmm. next year. And I think we're going to end up with kind of an odd redistribution of young talent, where some of these independent league teams like the Chicago Dogs or the Joliet Stammers or some of these teams are going to end up being, you know, legitimate options for people trying to keep their baseball career afloat. And maybe they still are. It still is that way for some people. But there's going to be an influx of talent to teams like that, don't you think?
Oh, for sure. For sure. And honestly, there's a lot of guys that I know that I've played with in my career that had been out of the game, and they went into the independent ball route and found success again, found themselves and came back and were just as successful. You know, Scotty Kazmir was the guy that comes to name for me, and he's out there still, you know, can't let go of the game. And, you know, shows the competitors that just all athletes are. It's tough, you know, because I'm sure it could happen with all the major sports right now. It's tough to see that what the COVID pandemic has done to sports in general. Man, I just want to watch a game on TV right now, and yeah. You know, you can't even do that to find some solace. It's just a very weird time, and you know, there's a lot of things that there could be dreams crushed, and there could be futures completely derailed by what's going on right now. So
how much did the money mean to you in the 10th round in 2002? Because you said there's a cap now and it's $20,000, which obviously is a tremendous amount of money for a lot of us, but is very low in terms of convincing somebody to not go to college or convincing somebody to perhaps not go down a different path or whatever. What did the money mean to you in the 10th round in 2002?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it really didn't mean much to me. As much as I could get, I was going to try and get. I had no representation, so I kind of did my negotiating mm-hmm. on my own, which probably cost me some bucks. But I was just happy that I was going to continue to fulfill my dream. Like, I was getting steps closer in something that, you know, in high school kind of seemed pretty bleak. I think my signing bonus was 50. I think I got 50 or maybe 65. Mm-hmm. I forget what it was. But, again, it's – doesn't matter. From going from a college kid to actually having something in your bank account is significant no matter what. So it was nice to have that. But for me, the idea that I was actually going to try to go even further in the game of baseball and take my dream further with the potential of making even more money, that was what meant the most to me.
Mm-hmm. Jason Hamill with us here on 670 The Score. Mm-hmm. And now, Jason, so you're doing some work over at Marquee. You're obviously good at talking about the game. Have been for a long time. And what else? What else is going on in the life of Jason Hamill? I know you got two children, right?
I have two kids, so that means I'm getting my teaching degree on the fly.
Yes, sir. Right there with you.
Oh man, the e-learning thing is difficult to say the least, and I can promise you that our teachers are very underpaid. I can go to great lengths to explain that. Wow. I'm sure there's a lot of people in America that can too. It's difficult to kind of manage. We have an 8 and a 5 year old and two dogs that don't stop barking, as you can hear in the background. The difficulty of trying to keep them on track when we're being parents and the teachers, they already didn't want to hear anything I wanted to say anyways, just because I was a parent. I was dad. And now when I'm trying to teach them math or reading or English and stuff like that, like it's kind of really run its course now where the boredom's setting in and the weather's nice. And so I'm obviously trying to finish out the school year with these guys and prepare them for a fun summer. At least we're able to get outside, maybe do a little golfing here and there, but yeah, just kind of being a family man and learning my ABCs again.
Yeah. I find that if I do structure, like hardcore structure, I do a little bit better with my 8-year-old boy. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's like, okay, hey, it's 8:50, time to go brush your teeth and take off the jammies and put on actual clothes. And we're going to begin quote school unquote at 9 o'clock, you know, and we do show and tell. He brings a toy for show and tell. We do show and tell at some point. Right. I recommend it. I recommend it, man. And he brings and he'll bring like, he's got a big stuffed bear. He's like, also daddy, Big Bear has brought a toy for show and tell. I'm like, all right, let's see it. What do we got?
He's got a smart boy. He's trying to extend that time so he doesn't have to do as much math homework.
That is absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. I'm trying. He enjoys baseball a little bit. I had that one moment that I'll never forget. I think it was 2 summers ago. I want it more, but like I was the dad in the park with a bag over my shoulder filled with baseballs, and I was pitching and I was organizing like 4 or 5 different neighborhood kids as they had gloves, and I was telling them how to field and where to do it, and all right, you be mm-hmm. the catcher and you be the guy at the plate, and they're all wiffle balls or whatever, and it was like, oh my god, I've wanted this my whole life. So that's great. But he doesn't really like watching the games at all. Mm-hmm. Kind of breaks my heart a little bit. Do your kids like watching baseball with you?
To be truthfully honest, no, yeah. He doesn't. He watched so many games from the stands, and that was kind of one of the reasons why I ended up walking away. You know, I felt physically great when I retired in 18 and or 19, I guess. But the arm felt great, and mentally I was still checked in. But you know, seeing the damage done at home with mom being single mom for 8 years, following me around, being my cheerleader, and the kids were not necessarily as excited. They always had fun going to the ballpark and watching the games, but it wasn't like a desirable thing for them to do. They wanted that summer. They wanted to go hang out with their cousins and friends and be in the pool and stuff. And you could still do that during the day, but I wasn't there with them and they wanted me there. So it kind of forced my hand, and you know, I was able to have a good spring with the Rangers and great organization to give me a chance, but it just wasn't going to be worth the time and the effort again to keep going on, you know, as much mm-hmm. as I wanted to. Just one of those life decisions that you have to face at some point, and you know, I don't regret it, and you know, it's been fun being home, but I also didn't plan on my retirement starting with a pandemic either, so it's been weird, to say the least.
Yeah, understood. Jason Hamill pitched for a lot of years. 2006, a debut with Tampa. 2018, at age 35, a final year with Kansas City. And as you mentioned, a spring in Texas. I, you know, you were terrific, especially the first time here as a Cub. Just that was a really good run at 8-5 with a 2.98 ERA and 17 starts before the trade. That's you and Samardzija to Oakland, mm-hmm. the Addison Russell deal,
yep.
right?
Yep, yep, yeah. yep. Shark and I went over there. It was fun.
Yeah, but tell me, give me a moment. Maybe it's a specific game, sometime when you felt really, really good about being a pitcher, felt really on top of your game at this, the highest level. Like, you got there, Jason. You got mm-hmm. to big leagues. You pitched a long time. And mm-hmm. you started 298 games. Is there one game or one moment where you think about being like, damn it, I was really good. I got it done that day.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't necessarily known for a guy that completed my games. I would definitely an innings eater for sure. But, you know, baseball is a game of adjustments, and I had to make quite a few of them throughout my career. It wasn't easy. It shouldn't be easy for anybody other than, say, like Mike Trout, because he's living on a different planet. But I remember my game. Actually, it was in 14. It was that year that you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's actually a couple games. My game when I was pitching against the Braves in Atlanta, it was a one hitter. I'd say that one probably resonates the most.
All right, hold on, because I'm looking at that right now. That's a one hitter. Jason Hayward, yep. A two out single in the seventh inning. Your future yep. teammate Jason Hayward, and that's yep. the only hit. It's a one hit shutout for Jason Hamill that day, huh?
Yep, that day. It was a day where, so first of all, I knew going in over my career, Atlanta had my number. In Atlanta, I couldn't pitch there. I was a sweaty dog. Like I always had trouble gripping the ball. So as humid as it was in Atlanta, I knew going in it was going to be a battle from the get go. So I learned over time how to adjust my pregame, not to get too sweaty going, but it didn't really matter. I knew I was going to sweat. So I was going really well that, and I had, you know, basically a no hitter into the seventh, and I was hitting my spots. I was throwing my changeup, which was my fourth best pitch, and it was being effective. And, you know, I was getting ground balls. Like I just felt so comfortable. And in that seventh inning where I gave up that hit, I was like, well, this is where I could either shut down or I'm going to keep going. And because I was exhausted at that point, and Buck left me in and said, hey, you're going to go ahead and keep doing this. And I just, you know, just rolled right through it. And, you know, Buck Showalter said after the game, he's like, this is a different Jason Hamill that, you know, we really didn't know we were getting. And, you know, it's impressive. And for me, that kind of resonated in myself, my confidence that, you know, I was figuring it out. You know, if you're not learning in the game, you're not making any progress. And, you know, I'd learned how to make the adjustments in the game in which I was in the stadium when I would get my butt kicked left and right. If you go back and look at my career numbers in Atlanta, it's embarrassing. Like I shouldn't even be in the big leagues, embarrassing. And to get through that was really a big moment for me, and just for self-confidence. And I think that really propelled me for the rest of my, you know, my next 6-7 years of my career. It was impressive for me and, you know, confidence building.
Well, I have your numbers against Atlanta here if you want them, but, you know, I'm not going to read them to you. But the internet is just.
I'm up in the like 6 or 7 range, right? 7 ERA or something like that. I mean, it's bad. I mean, I don't know if I ever got out of a game without giving up more runs than innings pitched.
it's not great. 11 games. How many runs? You have 41 games in 41 runs in 11 games. Not as bad. All right, it's not good.
Oh, that's ugly. That is ugly. Yeah. Oh, man.
Well, you know what? It has driven me crazy for a long time, Jason. You talk about Buck Showalter leaving you in and pushing you and giving you a chance to learn. How managers do not allow so many starting pitchers to face the batting order the third time through. And and it's just, if you don't give a guy a chance to do it, how is he ever supposed to learn how to do it, you know?
Exactly.
And,
exactly.
Right? It's like
I could go on a rant. I don't know how much.
I saw those rants on your face every once in a while, Jason. I saw those rants on your face as you would walk off the mat. Tell me.
You said it perfectly. How are you expecting a guy to develop as a pitcher if you're not allowing him to go deeper into the games? How do you expect him to go deep into a game? You know, that's part of learning in anything in life, right? That's what you have to understand. And so basically what you're doing as a manager is you're showing that pitcher that I'm only going to go with you when you've got the 20% of the time that you've got your A stuff. That's it. And then you're going to completely destroy a bullpen because whether or not you're trusting what your eyes tell you, like those bullpen guys are out there burning bullets, getting ready for that mid-game outing, and it might not be necessary. And you know, it's the evolution of baseball. It's the day and age of baseball, in which now it's matchups, and you know, the numbers have completely taken over. And to a certain extent, numbers tell the story. But again, in the game, what your eyes tell you should be trusted first. And I've seen many times where guys shouldn't be going out there, and just knowing that person and what they are and their grind, you know, they'll get through it. And then there's other times where you can throw up a 4 or 5 spot in like 7 pitches. That's how quickly it can happen. And, you know, you got to let guys figure that out. And if they can't figure it out, you know, we're going to continue to strip innings off those starting pitchers' numbers because they're not going to know how to get through it late unless they have their A stuff. And it's just, that's just the fact of the matter. I've been through it, and, you know, I was never a guy that wanted to come out of a game. And unfortunately, the manager's got the he's got the final call, and you don't want to be a not a team player, but you know, confidence in yourself sometimes can get in the way, but the confidence is the reason why we're at where we're at.
So who could you talk to about that? Could you talk to Joe Maddon about that? Or could you talk to a pitching coach about that? Or could you even talk to an executive about that and figure out, you know, why that mindset was pervasive and try to convince them to give you a shot to do it differently?
Yeah. I mean, it's all about, you know, talking and standing up for yourself and understanding that, you know, I believe I can do this. I want you to believe in me too. And it's kind of like being a salesman, you know, sales pitch it, because there are times when you think you can get it done and everybody else sees that you're not going to be able to get it done. And that's why the moves are made. But yeah, it's all about being an advocate for yourself and asking, first of all, why did you do that? And then if something happens, then you adjust. And if you end up not making good on your word, then you learn from that too. And it's also about put up or shut up. You have to do it if you're going to believe it. If you're going to try and defend it, you got to do it too.
Yeah. The few times you actually get a chance, you better get it done, yeah, or else you're not going to get that chance again.
Exactly.
I blame Tony La Russa. I go back to Tony La Russa, and I remember when his A's teams with the Bash brothers were so dominant, and he had these good starters, and then he had the closer in Eckersley. He had a righty lefty short man in Rick Honeycutt and Eric Plunk, and then he had Greg Catterae and Gene Nelson as the righty lefty long man. And then everybody's like, "Oh, that's how you build a bullpen. Okay, got it. Thank you very much." And everybody tried to copy it, and if they didn't necessarily have the people to do it, it's like, work with what you have. People, you know, use the arms that you have. But man, if managers drive me crazy, they must have driven you really crazy.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people saw that. It was just the competitor in me. It was never meant as any disrespect. It was always just, first of all, it was me knowing or thinking that I could get it done, and the frustration or the confidence to get it done. You know, it's mm-hmm. just it's the fire in a competitor, and that's it.
Yes. This texter texting the radio station, his name is Crazy Ryan, but you know, they have monikers. That's how they roll. Our people here on the Score, Jason. He says Jason Hamill was on the mound for both Anthony Rizzo tarp catches. Is that true?
Yep. Yeah, it was. Wow. I remember those.
Wow.
Still to my day, people don't know how difficult that is. And you know, I'll pat Rizzo on the back many, many times. One of the best first basemen I've ever played with. Also, probably one of the goofiest. And I don't know. When I came into the game, he didn't even know that I had played for other teams. He thought I had my first win when I was here in 14. Like it was kind of funny. So somewhat immature and clueless at certain points. But that guy, to make those catches, the one where he's literally standing and stepping almost into the crowd to catch it was unbelievable. Because that ball up there in the Chicago wind, as high as those things go, it's curling away from him. You know, to have balance to do that, it's beyond impressive. I mean, hats off to him. And you know, and those were also big outs for me too.
Yeah.
They're big outs for me to get me through difficult parts in the game.
Yeah, and that's the thing, the courage and the fearlessness for him to go up there, but it fits the style, right? I love the way that he charges on the bunt plays. I just think it gets in the head of the opposition. It makes your life easier too as a pitcher, doesn't it?
Yep, and it goes down in the books too, the scouting books. He will never get bunted at. Like, and if he does, it's probably a mistake, because the guys like that, the whole idea of a bunt defense is to take the bunt away. And he is committed to that. Like, if you don't get this bunt down in where you're supposed to, it's probably going to be two outs. It's definitely going to be one out, but it could be two outs. And that's what you don't want to get into. I mean, being a pitcher, we sacrifice bunt all the time. So we're trying to figure out what side of the field. There's certain ways you want to go on different bunt defenses. And he takes that side away. And he's fearless when he does it. So, I mean, as a pitcher, it's super appreciated, because also that's less area of I have to cover coming off the mound, so I can focus more on making my pitch.
You know, the chemistry and what you guys had together in 16, Jason, is discussed often. And I remember, you know, seeing it and feeling it just a little bit. And I've been talking about it for a while now. It's like, I feel like since David Ross left, the organization has been looking for exactly what he brought the entire time, whether they go out and they get, you know, Daniel Descalzo, or they go out and they get different guys, whatever, like maybe this guy can do this, maybe this guy can do that or whatever. It's like, I don't know if it'll work exactly the same as a manager, but I completely understand why they brought him there from a human perspective. Does that make sense to you to have him be the guy?
100%. He's one of the players that I tops of my list, top two or three, in which I would give him the utmost respect I could give any player. Essentially, he was a playing manager with us that year. Obviously, the 2 years that I was there, 15 and 16. But the times that he was there, you could, Joe on one end of the dugout, and he was doing his thing, and Rossi was very close, and, you know, just basically analyzing along with him. And then he would explain why Joe was doing this, and then he'd explain some other different routes you could take too. And just listening to his baseball brain go was impressive. So, I mean, to have a guy that's obviously a catcher, those brains are very, very special. They're the only guys to see the whole field, and they're analyzing everything going on. And his preparedness was second to none. I do believe that coming in as a manager and having that experience with being behind the dish like that, and then caring about analyzing a game like watching under Joe or any of the other guys he's ever played with, his brain was always going. So I do feel like it's going to be a great fit. And, you know, you can come back to the relationships that he has with the players. That might be the toughest thing for him, is to see where that line is, because it's going to be a gray area now, because he's the guy in charge. And, you know, sometimes those friendships can teeter a little bit, and you're wondering, you know, you don't want to offend, and you also understand that it's a job, and you're trying to do what's best for the team and the club that day. But, you know, I do feel like he's got the greatest head on his shoulders, and they did an amazing job bringing him in to kind of follow in, you know, right after what Joe did, you know, winning the first World Series in 100 years. Like, it's crazy that to sit back and watch, you know, I played with him, and I, like I said, I have the utmost respect for him, and I do feel like he's gonna be very successful in that role.
Jason Hamill, this was really fun, man. Thank you so much. I'm doing some stuff over at Marquee on Cubs 360 every once in a while. I know you and Sean Marshall had the trivia battle.
Yep. So, yeah. Oh my God! I can't believe I missed the last question. Oh my gosh! I was too ready to celebrate, and that cost me the answer. Michael Martinez,
well,
my apologies.
Yeah, no worries. It's only going to live on forever. It's just going to live on in perpetuity. But I hope to see you over there, and I hope your family stays well and stays healthy. Your wife was very lovely and sweet that night years ago. So I'm glad you guys are doing okay. Good luck with the homeschooling. All right.
Thanks a lot, Matt. Stay safe, man.
Hey, you too, Jason. What a pleasure. Thank you. That's Jason Hamill from Marquee, and from the Cubs, and from the Royals, and the Rangers, and the Orioles. You know, sometimes you talk to a guy, and I really have never talked to him in depth like that, and we're just kind of scratching the surface, aren't we? There's a lot of places that we could go with Jason Hamill, who had a very long and interesting career playing for a lot of different people and with a lot of different people. It's Hit and Run on 670 The Score. Top of the hour, Mark Grody is live and local with you, continuing on The Score. When we come back, our man Chris Kampka will tie the room together like a nice area rug. It is The Score. It's Hit and Run. Keep it right here.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
are listening to 670 The Score. And we take you back to the 90s with the Stereo MCs every week because we get Cam Connected. That's what we do. We get Cam Connected with our man Chris Kamka. We get ourselves Cam Connected. The Sultan of Stat from NBC Sports Chicago joins us right now on the Oppenheimer Ford Hotline. Oppenheimer Ford is in Melrose Park. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I am good. I am trying to remember what your colleague Jason Benetti once referred to you as. I believe it was a brain wrapped inside a smile, wrapped inside a rainbow. Something like that?
That sounds familiar.
It also sounds very Benettian. It really does. And I think he nailed it. But, you know, I don't know if he nailed the good comp, bad comp segment when he said that Bartolo Colon was more like a McDonald's Shamrock Shake. I thought my Pablo Picasso was pretty spot on. But what do you think? Noted statistician and thought machine in our game. What do you think, Chris?
Well, first of all, I appreciated the music, which makes me think more of Macho Man Randy Savage, local area product, who, by the way, went to spring training with the White Sox in 1975, but didn't make the team.
See?
Okay.
That's beautiful. That's the first tangent of the segment. I love it.
Well, as for the comp, I can tell you, I can't tell you why one is right, but I can tell you why the other one is wrong.
Okay.
And you might like what I have to say. It is, he can't be a Shamrock Shake. And I'll explain why. When I was growing up, the Shamrock Shake, you know, it was a certain size. But as I got older, the large Shamrock Shake seemed to get smaller and smaller and smaller. And in the case of Bartolo Colon, he kept getting larger and larger and larger. So that, for me, immediately is why Bartolo Colon cannot be a Shamrock Shake.
I am unfamiliar with that dynamic of the shake. Was it all milkshakes or just the Shamrock shake?
I think it's just their sizing in general. I order a large. I'm like, this can't be a large. This is a medium. Hmm. And it's kind of, you know, I like big shakes. So,
and I cannot lie. I like big shakes and I cannot lie. You other brothers can't deny, Chris Kamka. So hold on. Now you got me wondering whether, like, the food scientists and the merchandising scientists at Big Fast Food have been pulling a fast one on us with their drink sizes over the years. And I'm betting that's probably true. I mean, because they want to find any way they can to pinch a penny or three off of every item they sell.
I don't doubt that for a minute.
Okay. All right. So that's why Bartolo is not a Shamrock Shake, you have established.
Yep, that's it. Period. End of story.
Okay. All right. sounds good to me. Did you hear Carlton Fisk on with Ron Coomer and Zach Zabin? We played some today. Just such a pleasure to hear Fisk. I wish he did more of this kind of stuff. He's so compelling and has mellowed quite a bit from a surly midlife, if you will.
You bet I heard it. I mean, it's not very often I get to be on a show where my all-time favorite player had an interview. So That's a thrill. And I've got some good Fisk nuggets that, you know, some of my all-time favorites. First of all, he's 72 years old. He wore number 72. Mm-hmm. He was the 72 American League Rookie of the Year. His son was born in 72. And he had 72 home runs after the age of 40. And that's my favorite stock Carlton Fisk nugget.
That's amazing.
But 72. Of those 72 home runs he hit after the age of 40, 69 mm-hmm. of those came in games where he caught. If you take every other 40-year-old catcher in Major League history and add them up, they have a combined 43 home runs. So Fisk has beaten them all combined.
Wow. That's how few. That's amazing. So say it again. He hit 43 homers?
No, Fisk hit 69 home runs 69. After the age of 40 in games where he caught. Hmm. So a few of them were as a pinch hitter, DH. Every major leaguer in history, a catcher by the age of 40 or older in the game, has a combined 43 home runs.
All right, so now you've got me thinking. If the category is, and you probably don't have it in front of you, and that's fine, but the category is catchers over the age of 40 who have homered in the big leagues, I'll take Bob Boone. I'll bet he did. How about, did Benito Santiago keep catching into his 40s?
I think the biggest name after Fisk, if I remember correctly, was Rick Dempsey, believe it or not.
Oh, sure. Sure. Rick Dempsey of the Orioles. World Series MVP, Rick Dempsey in 83?
I believe you're right. I believe that's right.
Yeah. Amazing.
And here's another one.
Please, more Fisk.
Carlton Fisk is the Stan Musial of home runs. He has 376 of his career, 188 at home, 188 on the road. That is the highest number of any major league player ever that has the exact same at home and on the road.
Oh, so, yeah, you love stuff like that. You love the magical symmetry that sometimes numbers and our sport can provide. You love that.
Yeah,
stuff.
Number two on that list is another catcher, Gary Carter.
Wow. Speaking of numbers like that, I believe, was it Warren Spahn had 363 wins and also had 363 hits as a player?
That rings a bell. I believe that's true.
All right. I'm gonna look it up here because this is the important stuff, people. I don't know what people think is important, but it absolutely is important. It is 363 wins for Warren Spahn. And in terms of his hitting, his standard batting as well, it is 363 hits. Thank you very much. Good night, everybody. Thank you. This is why I get to hang with Chris Kampka, because every once in a while there's something rolling around in the brain there. Hey, in terms of Fisk, he led the league in triples as a rookie in 72, right?
Yes, he did. And as a matter of fact, he's the only American League catcher ever to lead the league in triples still.
Wow. So when we did this thing for the score when we were at Scorehouse, rest in peace, Scorehouse, and it was a baseball trivia thing, and I was the trivia guru there, and I asked Nick Shepkowski and Connor McKnight a baseball trivia question, a series of them, and one of the ones I asked was, what is the only category that Carlton Fisk has ever led the league in? And the answer in my mind was triples in 1972. Of course, I'm wrong because he led the league in hit by pitch in 1980. And I wish that was not the case so my trivia question could actually be correct.
Well, I mean, you could say, no, it's true.
Nope.
13.
No. Nope.
Yeah, he led the league.
Yeah. Yeah. I could say, what is the only category that Carlton Fisk led the league in when he won Rookie of the Year in 1972? All right. Thank you. This has been me workshopping my Carlton Fisk trivia questions.
Yeah. Well, I'm telling you, my favorite all-time player. So I got plenty of nuggets on him. In fact, his final major league home run was in 1993. At age 45, he homered on the first pitch he saw of the season.
First pitch of the entire season at age 45.
Yeah, it's amazing. Pretty amazing. And a little nugget I've passed along before to our friend Jim Deshays. Fisk homered off of Jim Deshays for his final homer, and he's one of two Hall of Famers that Deshays allowed the final home run of their career to. The other was Mike Schmidt. So, and he's like, yeah, I know. So.
Deshays has a great brain for stuff like this. He loves trivia. Is awfully good at it. Deshays I'm not surprised that he knows that and remembers that.
He's also well aware of the fact that he has the most career plate appearances without an extra base hit.
Jim Deshays? Really?
Yes.
Wow, that's brutal. That is brutal. What else is rolling around that big baseball brain of Chris Kampka before we wrap it up here on 670 The Score?
Well, now we're exiting the month of May and there's no baseball. So I was curious as to who in Major League history has the most home runs in the season in which they did not play a single game before June 1st.
Hmm.
And it's pretty obscure, I know. And the answer is 27, and it's held by three players tied. Juan Gonzalez in 1995, Tony Clark in 1996,
wow,
and Yordan Alvarez last year.
Oh, wow, sure. Well, that makes all the sense in the world that Yordan Alvarez would be that guy, the Astros DH and sometime outfielder who came up. I feel like I remember that Juan Gonzalez year, too, where he just exploded onto the scene having not played because of injury the first couple months. Is that number... That number is surprisingly low to me, considering that June, July, August, and September, you've got 4 months left, and 27 is the most anybody's ever hit. Well, no, I guess that's not true.
That's just among guys who didn't play prior to June 1st.
Gotcha.
I mean, obviously, gotcha. The guys who hit a ton of home runs, they're going to be healthy the whole year. They're going to be there. It's kind of a fluke thing. But, you know, since we're not going to have any games, I figured let's look it up because I've never seen that question asked before, and I'm like, there is something new I'm going to learn here, and so it is.
Yeah, there it is. That's interesting. Have you been waking up and watching any Korean baseball organization, Chris?
Oh yeah.
You have.
Oh yeah, I enjoyed Jason Benetti. In fact, this morning on the call with Jessica Mendoza, it was pretty good.
Well,
I mean, it's tough to learn because I mean, taking in an entire new league, it's a massive undertaking. So you have to watch a lot of it to kind of get it and let it sink in. And I've been enjoying it, though.
It's interesting. Yeah, well, you know, it's a good practice for Benetti to do a game like that, as that may be the way that some big league games have to happen along the way, assuming we get the game back. Chris, you are the best. Thank you so much, man. I really appreciate it every week.
Yeah, thanks for having me, as always.
You're the greatest. That's Chris Kampka right there. Yeah, as I reported earlier on in the show, heard from a source who does a lot of work with broadcast groups and talks to big league clubs, and a lot of clubs preparing to have their broadcasters not travel. But the good news is they're preparing as if there are going to be games. Let's hope there are games. Let's hope this week is a fruitful one in terms of negotiations and people show a willingness to figure it out and make a deal, Monty Hall. If you missed anything on today's show, you can go back and check out the podcast. Bronson Arroyo was terrific at 10 o'clock. Jason Hamill was really fun to talk to at 11 o'clock. And I had some personal words off sports about our city and the moment we're in at the very top of the show at 9 o'clock, if you missed that. Sean Anderson, terrific job as always producing. Thank you so much. Mark Grody is up next. Live and Local continues right here on 670 The Score. Have a good week, everybody, and hopefully we get a deal for Major League Baseball to return Guafi. See you later.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.